It's just the normal noises in here.
This is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
All right, hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week.
The album you will be reviewing this week is Peace Sells, But Who's Buying? By Megadeth.
Okay.
So Peace Sells, this is a description of the album. It says, Peace Sells, But Who's Buying is the second studio album by American thrash metal band Megadeth, released on September 19th, 1986 through Capitol Records. Widely regarded as one of the most influential albums in thrash metal, it solidified Megadeth's position as one of the genre's big four alongside Metallica, Slayer, and Anthrax. The album showcases the band's growing technical prowess, especially the intricate guitar work of Dave Mustaine and Chris Poland, and the tight rhythm section of David Ellefson on bass and Gar Samuelson on drums. Lyrically, the album deals with themes of political corruption, war, and social commentary, reflected in its iconic title track, Peace Sells, which became a signature song for the band and a defining statement of 1980s metal's more rebellious and critical voice. The record blends speed, aggression, and complexity, featuring tracks like Wake Up Dead, Devil's Island, and My Last Words. Produced by Dave Mustaine and Randy Burns, Peace Sells, But Who's Buying was a major step in production from their debut, Killing Is My Business and Business Is Good, and became a benchmark for thrash metal's musical and thematic potential. All right. This album was released on September 25th, 1986. The genre is thrash metal, and the label is Capitol Records, and it was produced by Dave Mustaine and Randy Burns. So there are 8 tracks on the album, and side one and side two are split up pretty evenly, 4 and 4. So if you're listening along, which we encourage you to do, if you want to stop at the after the last song on side one, and we take a pause at that point and discuss the album at the halfway mark. Just want to remind you to check out our Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress. You can get lots of cool perks there, like you can get these episodes the day before they go live, and you can get a shout out during these episodes and even pick an album for us to review. And so lots of cool stuff there. All those links will be in the description. But without further ado, here is the album. Here's the first song on the album, Wake Up Dead. So here we go. All right, and ending side one with Devil's Island. This is, I'm not a big metal fan, but I'm kind of getting into this.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time getting, like, attached to it, but it's, I mean, yeah, the musicianship is obviously, like, top-notch. I'm just, I don't know, having a hard time. After a little while, it starts to get a little old for me, and maybe it's just me.
Yeah, I can see that. I know after listening to this, I'm going to need a palate cleanser, maybe some, yeah. Like, I will say, like, the song, Peace Sells, I like the message of that song, but I found that the vocals were too low in the mix, and I couldn't quite make out what he was singing.
Yeah, actually, I did notice that too.
Yeah, I could make out Peace Sells, but who's buying? I could make out that part of it, but yeah, and I find it in a couple of the songs, actually, I thought is, I don't know, maybe everything else is just so high in the mix, but the vocals were a little bit, I don't know if they're muffled, but they seem to be low in the mix anyway.
Yeah, and I wasn't sure if that was just me and my hearing, or if that was, but I, like, if you're hearing the same thing, I mean, it's probably how it really is. I don't think they had a huge budget for this album. I think that's part of why it's not, they probably couldn't hire a well-known mixing engineer, and they probably couldn't afford the time, so it was probably mixed very quickly.
They did a pretty good job considering.
It is, yeah. But at the same time, it's sort of like, well, you have this song with a message.
Yeah.
And like I could make out like the odd word in the verses here and there, but I was struggling to hear everything that he was talking about, because he was talking about some interesting stuff about like how like the system is corrupt, and you know, I thought you had feelings, or I didn't think you had feelings, or something like that. And it's like, okay, that's a really cool and poetic way to talk about how corrupt the like the US government is and stuff. And but it's like, I couldn't hear everything that he was saying. And yeah, so I get that it's a loud, like, thrash metal record, and that it is supposed to be that. But at the same time, if you're going to have that, then the lyrics can't really matter as much as they do.
If you have a message, the lyrics shouldn't be buried, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, I understand that.
I'm having a difficult time connecting with the lyrics, connecting with it overall. I mean, it's just it does sort of it does, like you're saying, it does get old after a while. And everything sort of starts to blend together, and it all kind of sounds the same to me. Like I'm having a hard time remembering what each song kind of sounds like.
Yeah, me too, actually. I was kind of surprised at, you know, there's actually a lot of changes going on in some of these songs and stuff like that. Like Wake Up Dead changes like four or five different times going through it. And, but I can't really remember what it was.
Yeah, same here. It's not resonating with me as much as I would like it to. And like I said, I can get into the guitar playing, but I think if I'm being honest, I think that's really all. I was excited about it, but now that I'm thinking about it, I think that's really all I can pick out that I actually kind of like about it. The problem I have with a lot of metal music is it can be very precise, too precise, and
it's almost like they're throwing, like it's almost like showing off how many notes you can play rather than actually having like a song.
Yeah, like it's like about showing off technical proficiency rather than coming up with a guitar line that fits the song, or and that's my biggest, because I know there's a lot of metal fans, but my biggest disconnection with a lot of metal music is that sort of the lack of feel in the playing. They're like, it's impressive that you can play that fast, and don't get me wrong, it is impressive, but it's not really that interesting to me to listen to.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel about a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and that's where I'm sort of a little bit on the fence with this album, just because there's so much going on. I feel like I should be more into it than I am. But I'm just having a hard time connecting to it. And it's not that it's too loud. It's not that it's, you know, oh, it's a little busy, but it's not, I don't know. There's stuff that's busy that I've heard that actually interests me. But I don't know. I'm just having a hard time connecting to it for some reason.
I think Dave Mustaine, the lead singer and lead guitar player, he was in Metallica.
Yeah.
And he was, I don't know the whole story. I think he was either fired or he left on his own. But
I think it depends on who's telling the story. It
depends on who's telling the story. Yeah. And, there's no question that, like, Metallica is the more popular band. You know, even people who are not into metal know who Metallica is. I don't think they necessarily know who Megadeth are.
They probably heard the name. Like, again, I've definitely had heard Megadeth, and I kind of had an idea of what they sounded like and stuff like that, but I can't actually have told. If you sat me down, I wouldn't have been able to name you any of their songs or anything like that. It's just not in, it's just not in my musical vocabulary, I guess. It's one of those things that sometimes I feel like I missed it or something like that. But when I'm listening to this, I just feel like, yeah, this is why I never really listened to it.
Yeah. And, you know, if I'm being honest, I do like Metallica. And I think like this is probably going to upset a lot of people, but because there's a huge camp of metal fans that prefer Megadeth over Metallica. So this might be a lot of circles. This is blasphemy what I'm saying, but Kirk Hammett's guitar playing is more blues based than this. And that is more about, his is more about choosing lines that fit the song. He can play fast. Absolutely. And sometimes
he's classically trained, isn't he?
I don't know.
I think most of Metallica are classically trained.
I don't know. I don't think so.
I had heard that somewhere.
He might be. I honestly don't know. I honestly don't know much about them. I don't know much about their history. But what I do hear is he can play those fast guitar solos. But sometimes the song calls for something like that.
Exactly.
It's not every guitar solo he does that.
He's not a one-trick pony. He's got a lot of other things up his sleeve. I know he's a big admirer of Gary Moore and Peter Green. I mean, he bought their guitar.
Yeah, he's got the 59 the Les Paul. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I know he's got a deep appreciation for that sort of stuff. And can actually hold his own against guys like that who had a lot of feeling in their playing.
Yeah, and sort of the criticism about his playing is he uses a wah pedal too much. When I listen to this is more like, I don't hear that, the creativity in, and I don't know, I'm just going by what I've heard so far. I'm just going by one half of one album. I don't know Dave Mustaine's whole catalog, and I don't know his later stuff and what he did. I'm just going by what I've heard so far. But what I've heard so far is not that interesting to listen to. It's loud. And like I said, my favorite part of the whole thing isn't even the lead. It's the rhythm guitar.
Yeah, the rhythm guitar. And the rhythm guitar is the one thing I can sort of get into. I mean, I found myself tapping my foot and everything. But yeah, trying to actually connect with it is a little bit hard for me. You know, some music will find yourself, you know, tapping your foot even though you hate it. sort of stuff. This, I don't hate it.
I don't, I don't hate it. I'm not saying I hate it. I don't hate it. I'm just having a hard time connecting with it. No, it takes a lot for me to hate music.
Yeah, something really has to be like, it has to be like something really stupid about it. It just really pisses you off to make me to hate it.
Yeah, exactly.
And there is stuff out there that does that.
It's received, it's not badly received, but it's not like outstanding.
Well, apparently this is the album that put Megadeth on the map.
It did, yeah. But like Rolling Stone gives it 3 stars, which, you know, that's not bad, but it's not like, oh my God, this is one of the greatest albums of all time either. Yeah, most, Kerrang gave it 3 stars, 3 out of 5 stars. So yeah, I think in retrospect, people have praised it a little more, but yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's not, I think it's one of those things that has a very specific audience too.
Yeah. Well, thrash metal and metal and thrash metal in particular, I've got like, you know, they're fans and they're hardcore fans, and I respect that. I mean, there is stuff to admire about music like this. It's just not for me. And as much as I try to articulate why I don't necessarily connect with it, is not, you know, a condemnation of it. It's just a critique.
But there, I did manage to find a few interesting facts about the album.
Okay.
So the title track became an MTV staple without the band's permission. The opening bass line of Peace Sells was used by MTV News in the late 80s and early 90s. Ironically, MTV never asked Megadeth's permission at first, making it one of the most recognizable metal bass lines ever, even to people who didn't listen to metal.
Yeah, I did notice that bass line. It was actually a pretty good intro.
Yeah,
on that song.
Yeah, it really is.
But that's interesting. Yeah, get permission, folks. But I think it kind of worked out in their favor.
It did. The album almost didn't get made due to financial issues.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. During the recording, Megadeth was struggling financially. They were still dealing with drug issues and living in poverty. Dave Mustaine has talked about being evicted and eating mustard sandwiches. The band's early success came despite these heavy struggles. So yeah, they were really, really lucky that the album got made at all.
They're lucky it did as well as it did, too. And, you know, I mean, even though this isn't my thing, an album like this and with musicianship as good as it is, they shouldn't be living in poverty like that. But then again, I don't think anybody should be living in poverty like that. But anyway, it's just good for them for doing something that yanks them out of the dregs.
Exactly. The album, it was recorded with a jazz-influenced rhythm section. Both drummer Gar Samuelson and guitarist Chris Poland came from jazz fusion backgrounds, which gave the album a uniquely technical and swinging edge compared to other thrash albums of the time. Their influence is particularly noticeable in the complex time changes and solo sections.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of noticed that, but it's... That's part of what I was sort of noticing with like all the different changes going on in the album, and but it still feels like it should be more interesting to me than it is. But that is interesting that they actually came from like jazz fusion backgrounds. That's really interesting.
It also helped secure Megadeth's major label deal. Megadeth's debut was released on the small label Combat Records, but the success of that album caught the attention of Capitol Records, who bought the rights to Peace Sells mid-production and gave it a larger budget and distribution push. So Capitol Records, they were in the middle of recording this album when they got their deal for Capitol Records.
in the middle of recording the deal or recording the album. I thought it was in the middle of producing the album or something like that.
No, I guess it was mid production and gave it a larger budget. Yeah.
Interesting.
I guess it's funny. I think this was 86. So when you think about like Capitol Records, that is interesting because at the time, like the hair metal stuff would have been a lot bigger. But I guess it's interesting that they saw the potential in them.
Well, metal was pretty big at the time. Metal had a pretty good go of it, even starting in the early 70s with like, you know, well, there were a bunch of metal bands that started in the early 70s but were largely underground. But you had bands like Black Sabbath and Deep Purple who were kind of metal.
Yeah.
Led Zeppelin could be kind of metal. Sort of depends. Yeah, it wasn't until the late 70s where it really became like its own genre.
Yeah.
From the late 70s right up until the, metal never really went away.
No.
But its main popularity probably died around the early 90s or something like that.
Yeah, I would say so.
I mean its major popularity. The 80s was definitely the time for metal.
Well, but then in the late 90s, you had bands like Korn and...
Yeah, but that's like new metal. Yeah. It was sort of like a revamp of it, and it had sort of like a rap edge to it.
True. Yeah.
So it was sort of meant to be a little bit... It's a different sort of thing. But the, bands like Metallica and I'm not 100% sure about Megadeth, but I think they were probably kept on going as well.
Yeah, I think they're still going.
Yeah, so, they're still going. Yeah. But a lot of these bands, I mean, they still get a huge following.
Yeah.
But they're not at their peak popularity, but they're still very popular.
Yes, exactly.
Because metal fans are hardcore that way.
Yeah, they're very loyal.
Yes.
And then the last one is the cover art became iconic and political. The album cover painted by Ed Repka features Megadeth's mascot Vic Rattlehead as a skeletal real estate agent selling the United Nations building with the world in ruins behind him. It was one of the first overtly political covers in thrash, matching the album's themes of war, corruption, and media distortion.
Yeah, it's quite the
statement.
It is quite the statement.
So there you go. Those are some interesting facts about the album. So I guess we'll get into side two. But before we do that, let's hear from our friends over at the podcast, Can I Pod with Madness? So check those guys out.
Can I Pod with Madness? What we will be doing is looking through vintage Kerrang and Metal Hammer, all from late 80s. Yeah. Late 80s.
I remember when someone lent me Somewhere in Time, and by that time I'd heard Marillion and I'd heard Def Leppard and heard Bon Jovi on the radio, and I thought I knew what heavy metal was. But when this started, I thought, I don't know if I can take this. It was so harsh, it was so metal. I thought, I think this is going to be too much for me. But I persevered. I pushed through.
Yeah.
And I think if you tell most Maiden fans would probably think this has got a soft album because it's got keyboards on it or synth guitars or something. But yeah, for me, it was a shock to the system.
I credit Alice Cooper with introducing me into type of music, because when I heard that, it was two friends over. I was like, listen to music, like, obviously this has blown my mind, so it's going to blow your mind too, this is going to be amazing. And played it to them, and then they went, do you like heavy metal? And I was like mortified, and I've never forgotten that, because she'd been like, yes, I fucking like heavy metal, kicked over the tape player and walked out of my own room.
We'll now take a few seconds before we begin side two. Thank you. Here's side two.
Okay, and ending the album with My Last Words. Yeah.
That's an appropriate song for ending an album.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, to be honest, I know a common sort of thread throughout these podcasts is sometimes we're not really feeling it in the first side of the album and then it picks up on the second side. But this time, for me, that didn't really happen.
Well, I kind of liked Bad Omen, and I thought their cover of I Ain't Superstitious, I mean, sort of a cover, they rewrote the lyrics. Thought that was sort of interesting. Sort of an homage to Jeff Beck, I guess.
Yeah, I guess they were sort of doing a version of his version.
Yeah, he didn't write the song. But I think it's a Willie Dixon song.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. But I can appreciate the musicianship in it, and I like some of what's going on. It's just somehow the whole is not connecting with me for some reason. I don't know. I feel very, you know, I'm not even 100% sure what it is about it that doesn't connect with me. It's just not my thing. Maybe it's the production sound of the 80s or something like that. I found some of the acoustic guitar parts I didn't really like.
Yeah, there was, it seemed like they put too much chorus on it or something.
Yeah, a little too much chorus or compression or something like that on it, where it just seems a little too tinny.
Yeah, very like mid-range sort of.
Yeah, and I just was never much of a fan of that. I guess they did that to have that, you know, super polished sound was very 1980s. And I'm never connected with it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what genre of music it is. It's just that was everywhere in the 80s. And it's weird because I can listen to like Vaporwave or something like that. But it's almost like they're throwing a little bit of dirt on the old. The sounds of the 80s is very, very like super polished up and everything like that.
But yeah.
The Vaporwave takes that sound and sort of distorts it a little bit, and that makes it more appealing to me somehow.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. It's like everything was too clean.
Yeah.
It is weird because like, I think they realized it was too clean because production in the 90s was sort of stripped way back.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know what you mean about that effect that the acoustic guitars have. I wonder if in this case it was done to really distinguish it from the electric guitar.
Well, it did do that.
It did. It was effective in that way, but yeah.
It might have been. I just prefer an acoustic guitar. I mean, you can do a lot of different things with it. You could even throw effects on it, and it doesn't bother me. Some effects. But when you really just make it that extra trebly sort of, I don't know. There's just something about that just, I find a little grating.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. And again, I found that his voice, I don't know, like, I know a lot of singers are not comfortable with their voices.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if that's part of it, that he kind of wants to bury his voice a little bit. He's not a bad singer. I mean,
no, he's not actually that bad. He kind of reminds me of Bon Scott.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if that's maybe why he wants to bury the vocals. But again, I was reading the description of the album, and I kind of got a little excited because it's like, okay, this is like a political sort of thing, and you know, criticizing like Reagan era politics and that sort of thing. But then when I heard it, it's like, I get that you're singing about this stuff, but I can't hear what you're singing. Like, I can't hear it. And I mean that literally. I don't mean that it doesn't resonate with what you're saying, doesn't resonate with me. I literally can't hear what you're saying.
No, it's true. Even on like some songs where I suspected what they were singing wasn't particularly political or even, I mean, a lot of these songs, well, there's only 2 out of 8 songs that aren't explicit on it, apparently. I've only made out a couple of times where it was explicit. And even then, it really, I don't know, the occasional F word never, you know, offended me or anything like that. But I don't know, if anything got more explicit than that in there, I didn't hear it or understand it. So honestly, he could have been singing the Hokey Pokey and I wouldn't have heard it.
Did you know, actually, recently the guy that wrote the Hokey Pokey died?
Recently?
Yeah.
How old is the song?
Well, it's not as old as you think. But there was some difficulty at the funeral because, well, they had some trouble getting his body in the casket. Well, they put his left foot in. You're right. Like the occasional swear word doesn't really. There's worse things. I mean, he's not talking about, like, you know, killing babies or something, you know.
I don't know. I can't hear it.
That's the thing. Yeah, right. Exactly. Even the stuff that we've heard that doesn't necessarily resonate musically, like, we can sort of get behind the message of it. I'm having a hard time all around connecting with this. So, this might be a bit difficult, but what would be your three favorite songs on the album, three highlights?
Well, the three that sort of, you know, piqued my interest, I think. I think off the bat, I think Bad Omen was probably one of the better songs, I think. I Ain't Superstitious was kind of fun, but again, I don't know, I felt a little odd, differently about that one, but Peace Sells was, it's a classic. It's got a really good bass line intro and stuff like that. And so I'm going to go with Bad Omen, Peace Sells, and maybe Good Morning Black Friday. I thought that was
a pretty good one. Yeah, I think I would probably go with Wake Up Dead, because I kind of like the different changes in that one.
Yeah, the different changes are actually sort of interesting.
Yeah, and then, yeah, I think Peace Sells was good. And I think Black Morning / Good or Black Friday or Good Morning / Black Friday would be my third choice if I had to pick one. Yeah, I think I know the answer, but would you listen to this again?
I'm sort of on the fence, to be perfectly honest, because I think a few more listens and I probably might learn to like it a little bit more, but I can't see myself actually putting it on.
Yeah.
As it stands right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, it's maybe if I heard it somewhere, or listened to it a few times, but yeah, I don't think I'm going to take the time and listen to it again. Yeah, I wish I felt differently, but maybe some of their other stuff will resonate with me. But as it stands, this album just doesn't do it for me. So I guess we'll end the podcast there. Thank you so much for listening. If you made it this far, we want to hear from you. If you can check us out at polyphonicpress.com, go to the contact page, and we'd love to hear from you and drop us a line. And like I said, you can check us out on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress. And wherever you're listening, be sure to follow the show and leave us a rating and review, because it helps new listeners find us. And I think that pretty much does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.